Good evening.
The mad dog is loose in Europe. You have already heard how, without a word of warning, without an ultimatum, without the submission of terms, Hitler has launched his army and his airplanes against the Poles. So far as they are concerned, at least, the war has begun. So far as Britain's concerned, she is in a state of war. All precautions have been taken. Tonight, lights are out in the literal as well as in the figurative sense. Orders have been issued completing the mobilization of the armed forces. The British and French ambassadors have been instructed to demand from Hitler instant stoppage of aggressive action against Poland and the withdrawal of his troops from Polish soil. If this is refused, the ambassadors are to ask for their passports and leave Berlin. That means that the next step is war. Technically, the severance of relations is not an actual declaration, but in the past it has almost always preceded a declaration. So far, the news of the actual fighting is confused and contradictory. This morning we heard in London that Warsaw had been bombed and that hundreds of civilian lives had been lost. Later this afternoon it was denied that Warsaw had been bombed, but asserted that a number of other towns in the corridor, chiefly railway junctions and manufacturing towns, had been bombed. That seems to be true, but nothing is known about casualties. German troops have invaded Poland all along the frontier, and there has been fighting, but apparently not very severe fighting, as the Polish troops are reported to be withdrawing in good order to previously prepared defensive positions. The news that trickles through tells very little except the long-dreaded war has begun. I don't know how long it'll be before Britain and France are in. They have given Hitler one last chance to withdraw and discuss the issues at stake. Few believe he will do it, although there are some who profess to see in his attack on Poland one final bluff, to see if Britain and France really will fight or not. It's more likely, I think, that he's pursuing his policy of a lightning war against Poland, to be followed by an offer of peace when he has dealt with that country, before France and Britain have been able to give effective aid. The news startled London this morning. Londoners had gone to bed in a little more hopeful mood. The first news reached most of them by radio, but it was circulated in the suburbs by milkmen and butchers and other tradesmen who at first were not believed. The instant reaction in government circles was a summons to the cabinet, and then a summons to Parliament to meet at once. It did meet at 6 p.m., and Prime Minister Chamberlain, looking grave and stern, made his fateful announcement, the most fateful since 1914, when the House was told that Britain was at war with Germany. He said very little, prefacing his remarks with a statement that the time had come for action, rather than words. He told how he had hoped to avoid the task which he was then performing, but he said, "I fear that I must take the responsibility of asking the country to accept the awful arbitrament of war." And he added, "We shall stand at the bar of history, knowing that that responsibility rests on the shoulders of one man." "That man," said Mr. Chamberlain, "was the German Chancellor, whose course was undertaken to serve his own senseless ambition." The Prime Minister then recited briefly some of the stages of the negotiations and interchange of communications which were published tonight as a parliamentary white paper. He told how the so-called offer by Hitler had never been given to the Poles. But even after Hitler's duplicity in dealing with this document, Britain had tried to preserve the peace by calling for a discussion between Germany and Poland, pointing out that to be successful, the strain of aggressive action on the frontiers must be removed, and urging the withdrawal of the armies that were facing each other. The Poles at once accepted, provided the Germans would give adequate guarantees. "We never had any reply to that suggestion from the German government," said the Prime Minister, and he repeated with great solemnity, "We never had any reply." Mr. Chamberlain then told the House that the British ambassador in Berlin had been instructed to inform the German government that unless solemn assurances were received and aggressive action against Poland stopped, and German troops withdrawn from Polish territory, Great Britain would fulfill her obligations to Poland and the ambassador would ask for his passports. Mr. Chamberlain ended on a high note. "We are ready," he said, and he told of the complete mobilization of the three forces. "We're stronger than in 1914, he added, and then said he would ask the House to pass a bill imposing compulsory military service on all fit men between the ages of 18 and 41. And with a compliment to Mussolini for his strenuous and honest efforts for peace, he sat down. The two opposition leaders, Sir Archibald Sinclair and Arthur Greenwood, pledged their support and that of their parties to the government. And before going on with the routine business, the House voted an emergency credit of £500 million for the expenses of any war in which His Majesty might be engaged. up to March 31st next. The House then tackled the job of passing through all their stages 15 bills, mostly of a technical nature, giving the government war powers and suspending the action of ordinary laws. Parliament will meet again tomorrow and probably will continue in permanent session. With a minimum of delay, all the defensive arrangements which have been in preparation were put in operation. A series of orders were issued, mobilizing the air raid protection services, the auxiliary fire services, and other volunteer services manned by both men and women. Final mobilization orders were issued to members of the forces. Householders were told that they must black out all their lights after sundown tonight. All street lighting is out, and automobile headlines are dimmed and covered, only a slit of light being allowed to be shown. There's little traffic on the roads or in the streets. The government has taken over the railways, but subject to military necessity, there'll be as little interference with their ordinary working as possible. They're being controlled by a committee of their own managers. Everywhere tonight, men and women are discussing the chances of war. There's less facile optimism than was displayed in 1914, and whatever anyone may think, few venture to prophesy a short war. Of course, the decision of Italy not to fight has encouraged British opinion, which finds it, as I suggested last night, strongly reminiscent of Italy's action 25 years ago. There seems on the face of it to be little doubt that Mussolini, having failed to persuade Hitler to peace, decided to let him go his own way alone. Hitler's assertion to the Reichstag today that he would not ask any foreign help in the task he has undertaken deceives no one. There's also the theory that Mussolini, by holding aloof from the war, may hope to be in a position to mediate when the time comes. But I think it must come soon, if it's coming at all. As I've indicated already, Chamberlain's given Hitler one last chance to withdraw. If he rejects it, and Britain and France are drawn in, the only likely time for peace talk is after Germany is beaten. How long that may be, no one can tell. We have found out in all recent wars from 1914 until today that there's a tendency to underestimate the resisting power of even a weak nation, and Germany is not weak. Although there's the undoubted fact that she's in a relatively worse position than in 1914. The apparent increase in her manpower due to her recent annexations is deceptive, for it takes no account of the manpower of her Austrian ally in 1914. Now, with Italy out, she's definitely inferior in that respect. Economically, she's also worse off, and it's believed cannot feed herself throughout a long war, and she has no money to buy supplies abroad. Economically, of course, Britain has always been stronger. But today, she's stronger even than she was in 1914. Her gold reserve is larger, and she has supplies to last as long as required, while she will have the inexhaustible resources in food and material of the United States to draw on, even if the Neutrality Act is not modified, as everyone on this side of the water believes it will be. The evacuation of the school children from London and the other large towns proceeded without a hitch today, and the number expected to be moved was largely exceeded. This has necessitated some changes in today's program, the effect of which will be that mothers and invalids will be taken to the safe areas sooner than was expected. All that can be done for the safety of the civilian population of Britain has been done, and there's nothing now to do but wait with a stout heart for whatever may come. There's calm confidence that the defense forces are adequate, and Britain is a nation unafraid. Thank you and good night.
400,000 children have already left London, and more people will follow tomorrow. The actual state of hostilities in the Polish corridor and elsewhere is still obscure. The Germans claim that their opening offensives from East Prussia and Slovakia were successful, but the Poles say that these have been repulsed. The Germans claim that troops approaching from the west are about halfway across the corridor, and that their air force is in command of the air. The number of important Polish towns have been bombed by German planes, but the Polish radio tonight claimed that many of the German bombs did not explode. The Poles also claim that the German attacks on the Polish lines in the Danzig Free State have been repulsed. The Poles also say that a raid on Warsaw was beaten off, and that 7 German planes have been brought down at Krakow and at Gdynia. Messages are reaching us from Warsaw saying that there was a calm atmosphere in that capital this morning. As early as 7 a.m., Air raid warnings were sounded, but nothing was heard or seen except the anti-aircraft fire. The ARP machinery is said to have worked perfectly, and in fact, many people thought that the first alarm was a practice. Public opinion seems to have regarded war as inevitable, and for the most part, Poland heard of the outbreak of hostilities through the wireless. News has just been received direct from Warsaw that several squadrons of German aeroplanes raided the capital late this afternoon. Two of the German planes were brought down by Polish fighters. Mr. Chamberlain announced Britain's last warning to Germany to a crowded House of Commons this evening. He said the time had come for action rather than for speech. No opportunity had been neglected of making clear to the German government that if they used force again, as they had done in the past, we were resolved to oppose them by force. We should stand at the bar of history knowing that the responsibility for this terrible catastrophe rested on one man. The German Chancellor, Mr. Chamberlain went on, had plunged the world into misery to serve his own senseless ambition. It would have been easy to avoid the final clash if there had been the least desire by the German government for a peaceful settlement. Mr. Chamberlain repeated that the German proposals which Poland was alleged to have rejected had never been communicated by Germany to Poland at all. The position was, or seemed to be, that Germany claimed to treat Poland as in the wrong for not negotiating about proposals which she, Poland, had never heard of. Even the British government had never got a copy of the German proposals and had heard of them for the first time when they were broadcast last night. Mr. Chamberlain instanced, in proof of our readiness for all eventualities, further defense steps such as the complete mobilization today of the whole Navy, Army, and Air Force.
Polish announcement claims, however, that many German bombs did not explode. Now, here is a sketch of the way the situation has developed since early this morning. At 5:40 today, the Berlin wireless station announced that the Führer had issued a proclamation to the army. It was said that Poland had refused the peaceful settlement of relations that Herr Hitler had desired and had appealed to arms. Germans in Poland were persecuted, and a series of violations of the frontier, intolerable to a great power, proved that Poland was no longer willing to respect the frontier of the Reich. In order to put an end to this lunacy, said the Führer's proclamation, I have no other choice than to meet force with force from now on. The proclamation added that the German army would fight the battle for the honor and vital rights of reborn Germany with determination. The official German wireless station next issued a warning to all ships in the Baltic that the port of Gdynia was closed and every ship entering or leaving risked destruction. Almost immediately afterwards came another announcement from the Berlin wireless that Herr Forster, the Nazi leader in Danzig, had issued a proclamation declaring Danzig to have returned today to the Greater German Reich. Herr Forster sent a telegram to Herr Hitler announcing the reunion of Danzig with the Reich from today. Herr Hitler telegraphed a reply accepting Danzig's union with Germany and appointing Herr Forster as head of the Danzig civil administration. Next came a meeting of the Reichstag, which was addressed by Herr Hitler. The German Chancellor repeated his arguments that Danzig and the corridor were German, and his allegations that the German minority in Poland had been tortured. He claimed that Germany, on the other hand, had always kept her obligations to minorities. Herr
Herr Hitler concluded by moving a bill for the union of Danzig with the Reich. This was passed with acclamation. Early in the day, President Moschitsky of Poland broadcast a proclamation to the Polish nation. Early this morning, said the president, Germany launched an attack on the Polish state. In this historic moment, I appeal to all our citizens with the deep conviction that the whole nation will rally round the supreme commander of the armed forces in defense of its freedom, independence, and honor, and that it will give a proper reply to the German aggressor as it has so often done in the past. Marshal Schmiglerich issued a proclamation to the Polish army. In spite of all sacrifices, stated the marshal, the final victory will be with us and our allies. After a meeting of the Italian Cabinet Council today, it was announced that Italy will not take any initiative in military operations. This was subsequent to a telegram which Herr Hitler today sent to Signor Mussolini, thanking him for Italian diplomatic and political help, and adding that he was convinced that he would be able, with German military force alone, to fulfill his mission, and that he would not need to call for military help from Italy. It was semi-officially announced in Paris tonight that France had sent an affirmative reply to Signor Mussolini's offer to mediate in the Polish-German dispute. The statement said, the French government, in common with other governments, received communication of an Italian proposal tending to ensure a settlement of European difficulties. After having deliberated on this, the French government gave an affirmative reply. Great Britain, in accepting the President's message, said, deeply impressed by the humanitarian considerations to which the President's message referred, it was already the settled policy of His Majesty's government, should they become involved in hostilities, to refrain from such action and confine bombardment to strictly military objectives, upon the understanding that those same rules would be scrupulously observed by all their opponents. The Polish reply is similar to that of Great Britain. It draws attention, however, to the bombing carried out by the German Air Force on unfortified Polish cities. Unless these stop, it says, Poland will not be able to guarantee the observance of the rules. President Roosevelt requested an immediate reply to his appeal. He said that the ruthless bombing from the air of civilians in unfortified centers of population during hostilities in the past few years had profoundly shocked the conscience of humanity. If resort was had to this sort of human barbarism during the period of tragic conflagration now confronting the world, said President Roosevelt in his appeal, hundreds of thousands of innocent human beings would lose their lives. The president said he had addressed the appeal to every government who might be involved in hostilities. Herr Hitler has at last replied to President Roosevelt's peace appeal of last week. In his message to the president, he says he has left nothing untried to settle in a friendly manner the dispute between Germany and Poland. Great Britain's last warning to Germany to withdraw her army from Polish territory was handed to the German foreign minister in Berlin tonight by the British ambassador. Herr von Ribbentrop told our ambassador that he must refer the communication to Herr Hitler. A similar communication from the French government to Germany is expected to be handed over in Berlin shortly by the French ambassador. The British warning had been announced in the House of Commons earlier in the evening by Mr. Chamberlain, and he added these words, if the reply is unfavorable, and I do not suggest it is likely to be otherwise, His Majesty's ambassador is instructed to ask for his passport. In that case, we are ready. Tonight, the Polish government requested the German chargé d'affaires in Warsaw to leave Poland immediately. At the same time, the Polish ambassador in Berlin was instructed by his government to leave Germany at once with the whole of his staff.
Both houses of the Polish Parliament are now in session considering the situation which has arisen as a result of the German invasion. Tonight, the British government announced that the military conscription age is to be extended to cover all men between 18 and 41. Both houses of Parliament approved a £500 million special credit for war purposes, and during the evening they passed through all their stages some 15 urgent defence measures. These have already received the royal assent and are now law. Both houses of Parliament have adjourned until tomorrow afternoon, and it is possible that they will meet on Sunday also, and perhaps on several other days next week. The British land, sea, and air forces are now completely mobilized, as are those of France. And other steps taken yesterday by the British government are the complete control, or one, the complete control of the railways, and two, the fixing of food prices. Tonight the whole country is blacked out, and all personnel of the air raid precautions and auxiliary fire services are at their posts. 400,000 children have already been taken out of London, and more will follow tomorrow. Both Britain and France have notified the American government of their acceptance of President Roosevelt's appeal against bombing of civilian populations or undefended cities. Both Britain and France, should they become involved in hostilities, say that they will refrain from such action on the understanding that others observe the same rule. Now, news about the fighting in the Polish corridor and elsewhere is vague. The Germans have bombed several places, though they claim that their objectives were only aerodromes. A raid on Warsaw was beaten off, and some German bombers have been brought down. The Germans tonight claim to have advanced some distance into the corridor. There has been fighting in Danzig, where the Poles claim to be holding their line.
It was a crowded and hushed House of Commons which heard Mr. Chamberlain make his statement today. Mr. Chamberlain began, "I do not propose to say many words tonight. The time has come for action rather than speech. 18 months ago, I prayed that the responsibility might not fall upon me to ask this country to accept the awful arbitrament of war. I fear I may not be able to avoid that responsibility. But I would not wish for conditions clearer than they are today as to where my duty lies. We have not neglected any means of making it crystal clear to the German government that if they insisted on using force again in the manner in which they have used it in the past, we were resolved to oppose them by force. Now that all the relevant documents are being made public, we shall stand at the bar of history knowing that the responsibility for this terrible catastrophe lies on the shoulders of one man. The German Chancellor has not hesitated to plunge the world into misery to serve his own senseless ambitions." This passage of Mr. Chamberlain's speech was loudly cheered by the House. I would like to thank the House for the forbearance they have shown on two recent occasions in not demanding from me information which they recognized I could not give while these negotiations were still in progress. I have now had all the correspondence with the German government put into the form of a white paper. I do not think it is necessary for me to refer in detail now to these documents, which are already past history. They make it perfectly clear that our object has been to try and bring about discussions about the Polish-German dispute between the two countries themselves on terms of equality. The settlement to be one which safeguarded the independence of Poland and secured its due observance by international guarantees. There is just one passage of a communication dated the 30th of August, which I would like to quote, because it shows how easily the final clash might have been avoided if there had been the least desire on the part of the German government to arrive at a peaceful settlement. In this document, we said, His Majesty's government fully recognize the need for speed in the initiation of discussions, and they share the apprehensions of the Chancellor arising from the proximity of two mobilized armies standing face to face. They would accordingly most strongly urge that both parties should undertake during negotiations that no aggressive military movement will take place. His Majesty's government feel confident that they can obtain such an undertaking from the Polish government if the German government would give similar assurances. That telegram brought an instantaneous reply from the Polish government dated the 31st of August, in which the Polish government said that they were prepared, on a reciprocal basis, to give a guarantee in the event of negotiations taking place that Polish troops would not violate the frontier of the German Reich, providing a corresponding guarantee was given by the Germans. We never had any reply from the German government to that suggestion, a suggestion which, if followed, might have saved the catastrophe which took place this morning.
The British government lost no time in making it clear that Britain and France would fulfill their obligations to Poland. And the following statement was made officially this morning, a few hours after the first news of the invasion. If the proclamation to the German people by Herr Hitler, which has already been announced, should mean, as it would seem to mean, that Germany has declared war on Poland, it can be stated on the highest authority that Great Britain and France are inflexibly determined to fulfill to the uttermost their obligations to the Polish government. It has also been made clear in official circles in London that the account which the Germans broadcast last night about the course of the negotiations is wholly misleading. On Tuesday, Herr Hitler informed Sir Neville Henderson that he expected a Polish plenipotentiary to appear in Berlin by Wednesday at the latest, with full powers to negotiate a settlement. In the meantime, he added that he hoped to elaborate proposals. In other words, the Polish government was expected to submit to the procedure which was imposed on President Hacha of Czechoslovakia. That is, it was expected to send an envoy to Berlin to accept terms which were wholly unknown. Quite naturally, it is felt here, the Polish government were not willing to place themselves in that humiliating position. Even in the case of peace terms which are imposed on a defeated power, it is not customary to demand that negotiators should be refused the right of referring to their government. At such short notice, official circles in London give no further comment on the misleading statements of the German government, except to define the attitude of this country as follows. If the German government had sincerely wanted to settle the dispute by negotiation, they would not have adopted the procedure they have, which has the character of an ultimatum. On the contrary, they would have begun discussions with Poland, in accordance with the normal procedure of civilized governments, so as to fix the place and time for the opening of negotiations. As for the German terms published last night, the British government considers that Poland was fully justified in refusing to submit to the treatment which the German government tried to impose on them. The terms should, in the view of the British government, have been submitted to Poland with time to consider whether they infringe Poland's vital interests or not. Germany, it is recalled, informed the British government in writing that she had every intention of respecting Polish vital interests. This explanation of the true course of the negotiations between London and Berlin corrects the long statement broadcast from Berlin last night, which included a detailed plan in 16 points for the immediate return of Danzig to the Reich and a plebiscite in the Polish corridor. The course of hostilities between Germany and Poland is still far from clear, and many reports coming from foreign capitals are not to be regarded as entirely reliable. According to a Warsaw report, the main attack comes from East Prussia. Other reports say that the German forces have attacked on Poland's western frontier opposite the corridor, Polish Upper Silesia, and it was stated that 7 towns had been bombed. Warsaw was said to be among them, but a message from the British embassy there says that there has been no bombing of the capital. The spokesman of the Polish embassy in London said that Polish towns have been taken completely unawares. Nobody supposed there was war, he said. Without any declaration of war, they have bombed our Polish cities. The German statement is that their aeroplanes have not been bombing open towns, but only military objectives in or near the towns. The fact that fighting is going on in Danzig is confirmed by both Polish and German sources. According to the Germans, the Nazi forces had occupied the railway offices, but the Poles are still holding out in the post office. A Polish report says that the Nazis attacked the only Polish military position in the Free City, the Westerplatte, and were repulsed. According to a German radio announcement this afternoon, 3 German bomber squadrons have attacked the Polish town of Radom. On the way back, it is said, they bombed a Polish railway station. Radom is an important town in the center of Poland, south of Warsaw. The president of Poland, President Mosiecki, has broadcast a proclamation to the Polish nation in the following terms. Early this morning, Germany launched an attack on the Polish state. In this historic moment, I appeal to all our citizens with the deep conviction that the whole nation will rally round the Supreme Commander of the Armed Forces in defense of its freedom, independence, and honor, and that it will give a proper reply to the German aggressor as it has so often done in the past. The whole nation, President Mosiecki went on, conscious that the blessing of the Almighty rests on its fight for a sacred and just cause, and united behind the army, will take up the struggle until victory is complete. The Berlin wireless station announced at 5:40 this morning that the Führer had issued a proclamation to the army. It said that Poland had refused the peaceful settlement of relations that Herr Hitler had desired and had appealed to arms. Germans in Poland were persecuted, and a series of violations of the frontier, intolerable to a great Boer, proved that Poland was no longer willing to respect the frontier of the Reich. In order to put an end to this lunacy, said the Führer's proclamation, I have no other choice than to meet force with force from now on. The official German wireless station next issued a warning to all ships in the Baltic, stating, the entrance to the port of Gdynia is closed, and every ship entering or leaving risks the danger of being destroyed. Almost immediately afterwards came another announcement from the Berlin wireless that Herr Forster, the Nazi leader in Danzig, had issued a proclamation. It read, Men and women of Danzig, the hour for which we have longed for 20 years has come. Today, Danzig has returned to the greater German Reich. Herr Forster then sent a telegram to Herr Hitler announcing the reunion of Danzig with the Reich from today. He stated that he had put into force the constitutional law affecting the reunion. The terms of this law state, 1, that the constitution of the Free City of Danzig is cancelled with immediate effect, 2, that all legislative and executive power is in the hands of the head of the state, 3, that the land and people now form part of the territory of the German Reich. Herr Hitler then telegraphed to Herr Forster, accepting the proclamation of Danzig's union with Germany. He said that the law for the union was ratified and appointed Herr Forster head of the civil administration of Danzig. At short intervals throughout today, the official German wireless has been making further announcements. The most important of these came at 11:40 this morning from the German Supreme Command. It said that the armed forces had taken over the active protection of the German Reich, and the German troops had crossed all the frontiers into Poland in order to offer resistance to Polish force. it said that the air arm also had come into action and that the German Navy had taken over the protection of the Baltic. Orders of the day were then broadcast to the three German forces. The address to the Air Force, issued by Field Marshal Goering, said that Germany's cup was now full. It added, "The Führer has called us. Our great hour has come." The German wireless also announced that Dr. Burkhardt, the League High Commissioner, left Danzig with his staff this morning after Herr Forster had called on him. The swastika flag is now flying over Dr. Burkhardt's former office. This morning, Herr Forster told the Danzig railwaymen that the railways, hitherto under Polish management, had now become theirs. Other German wireless announcements were that all civil flying over Germany has been forbidden and that neutral aeroplanes may be shot down if they fly over the Polish corridor. All schools in Germany are to be closed until further notice. From Cologne, an order was broadcast 20 minutes ago saying that until further notice, there is to be a complete blackout over the whole of Western Germany at night. At this morning's meeting of the Reichstag, which was also broadcast, Herr Hitler repeated his arguments that Danzig and the corridor were German and that the German minority had been tortured. Germany, on the other hand, had always kept her obligations to minorities, according to him. He went on, "It is a deliberate lie for anyone to suggest that we always try to bring about revisions under pressure. I have this time once more tried to pursue our demands through peaceful channels." Herr Hitler declared that the British government had not wanted to initiate negotiations themselves, but had said they wanted to bring the Poles to the conference table. He therefore worked out the proposals made known last night, and nothing, he claimed, could have been more loyal and more modest than they were. But he had sat waiting for 3 days without a Polish plenipotentiary arriving, and that was intolerable. "I have therefore now decided," he went on, "to speak to the Poles in the same terms as they have used to us for months past." Herr Hitler continued with references to other nations. He had solemnly assured the Western powers that he demanded and would demand nothing from them. He had offered Britain Germany's friendship. "The frontier with France," he repeated, "was permanent." Next came Italy. "We must above all thank Italy, who has supported us the whole time. But they will understand that I will not appeal to foreign help in this fateful hour. We will carry out this, our task, ourselves." As for the German-Soviet pact, Herr Hitler claimed that this ensured that their forces would be used together and not against each other. Then he outlined his aims. First, to solve the question of Danzig and the corridor, and then to ensure that relations between Poland and Germany would be so changed as to enable them to live together peacefully. "I am therefore determined," he said, "to fight until the Polish government is inclined to set up these relations or until another government is prepared to do so. I wish to ensure that peace on the eastern frontier does not have a different appearance from that on the western frontier." He stated that he had told his Air Force to confine themselves to military objectives, and he went on to claim that last night Poles were fighting on German territory, and since 5:45 this morning, Germany had been shooting back. "Every bomb will be answered with bombs," he added. "Whoever fights with poison gas will be fought with poison gas." Herr Hitler then told the Reichstag that if anything happened to him, his successor would be Field Marshal Goering, and after him, Herr Hess. If anything happened to Herr Hess, in turn, then a Senate would appoint a new leader. He requests an immediate reply. It is believed in Washington that President Roosevelt has not yet reached a decision about invoking the Neutrality Act or summoning Congress. A White House official represented the president as saying that fighting would have to be extended before the United States took such a step. Here in London, an important meeting of ministers was held at No. 10 Downing Street at 3 o'clock this afternoon. Viscount Gort, Chief of the Imperial General Staff, was present, and Sir Cyril Newall, Chief of the Air Staff. Earlier, Mr. Winston Churchill had spent half an hour at No. 10. About half an hour ago, the King went by car from Buckingham Palace to give an audience to Mr. Chamberlain at No. 10 Downing Street, a thing that has never happened before. Mr. Chamberlain, it is understood, was anxious to tell the King about the latest developments, but His Majesty wished to save him the time which would be taken by driving to Buckingham Palace and back again. As the King left the palace, he was greeted with tremendous cheering from the crowd outside. He left Downing Street a few minutes ago. Her Majesty the Queen spent nearly an hour at the headquarters of the Women's Volunteer Services in Westminster, and during a complete tour of the building, she spoke to many of the women working there. The Queen told the Dowager Marchioness of Reading, who received her, that she was very impressed by the spirit and atmosphere of the organization. She also expressed her satisfaction with the latest reports of the evacuation services. Throughout the land, local authorities are setting up ARP emergency committees. The distribution of civilian respirators is being completed, and requisitioning of premises and vehicles is authorized. Public shelters are being constructed in 24-hour shifts. Covered trenches, already completed, are being opened up for use, and the erection of household shelters is being hastened. First aid posts are being equipped and prepared, and the report and control centers are already manned. Auxiliary fire services are fully prepared. Restrictions of civil flying over the United Kingdom were announced last night and make almost the entire eastern half of England and Scotland a prohibited area. Other specified areas are banned. Today, Imperial Airways suspended all services to the continent, and all internal railway air services run by the railways are cancelled. Another order withdraws all licenses for experimental radio sending and receiving stations. In this country, it's just been announced that blackout regulations come into effect from sunset tonight. The British and Australian governments have imposed a censorship on postal correspondence. It is stated in London that in general, our correspondence with the rest of the empire will not be affected by the censorship. All telephone services to foreign countries and to ships at sea were suspended last night. Inland telegrams are now subject to certain restrictions. A further order makes it an offence for anyone to buy more than a week's supply of any kind of food or to keep more than a week's supply apart from stores bought previously. This order, it is explained, does not imply a food shortage. It is merely to prevent hoarding and abnormal purchases which might cause a shortage in local shops. The British government has bought 5 million bushels of wheat from the Canadian Wheat Board, part of it being new crop wheat. Our government has also asked Denmark to supply as quickly as possible 24,000 hundredweight of bacon above the fixed quota. It is expected that the bacon will be dispatched this week. The London Provision Exchange has announced that by order of the Food Defence Committee, today's prices of all food commodities have been fixed as standstill prices until further notice. A few hours ago, a thin column of smoke appeared over the roof of the German embassy in London, and pieces of charred paper drifted to the ground. It is thought that the embassy staff were burning their secret documents. The Russian Prime Minister, Monsieur Molotov, explaining the Soviet-German pact in the Russian Parliament last night, said it was signed when it became evident that nothing would become of the Anglo-French-Soviet negotiations. Monsieur Molotov accused the British of being insincere, of asking more than they were ready to offer, and of being too slow. He said the Anglo-French definition of indirect aggression provided them with a means of backing out. Monsieur Molotov continued, even if war is unavoidable, it will be limited in scope. Let those who, under the mask of love for peace, try to set Europe afire, assume that responsibility. The pact with Germany, he said, had no wider implications, and he warned those who read too much into it. The pact, he added, would ensure the growth of Soviet influence on European affairs. Marshal Voroshilov introduced to the Parliament a law extending the period of service in most branches of the Soviet forces and lowering the age of conscript recruits. A message just received from Washington quotes President Roosevelt as saying he believed that the United States could stay out of the war. A fuller report is awaited. And now news from the Empire. The Viceroy of India has received assurances of loyalty and offers of their resources from 18 more Indian princes. They include the Maharajas of Barova, Pashiala, and Gwalior, and the Nawab of Bhopal. At least 28 Indian rulers have now offered their services to the King Emperor. Prominent Sikhs all over the Punjab have issued a manifesto assuring the King Emperor their support. They declare that the Sikhs are determined to uphold their martial traditions by helping Great Britain against the aggressor states. Air Marshal Arthur Sheridan Barrett has been appointed Air Officer commanding Air Forces in India. Air Marshal Barrett has been commandant of the RAF Staff College since 1936. The Burma Senate today passed a resolution approving British policy. The rulers of the Malay states, the Chinese and Indian communities in Malaya, and the communities of Kenya are among those who have sent expressions of loyal support to London. In Singapore, a communique issued today orders all British ships east of Singapore to call at that port before proceeding west. The Canadian Parliament has been summoned to meet on Sunday at 3 p.m. The machinery for putting Canada on a war basis is already in operation. The acting Prime Minister of New Zealand, Mr. Fraser, announced today that the Governor General had proclaimed a state of emergency in the Dominion. He added that the proclamation was only an obvious precautionary measure. Regulations have been issued about censorship and publicity, control of shipping, stabilization of prices, and the three armed services. As listeners earlier in this transmission will have heard, Mr. Chamberlain has just made a vital announcement in the House of Commons. The British ambassador in Berlin has informed the German government that unless satisfactory assurances are given that all aggressive action against Poland has been suspended and all German troops withdrawn from Poland, then the British government will, without hesitation, fulfill its obligations. If the German reply is unfavorable, then the British ambassador will ask for his passport. A little later in his speech, Mr. Chamberlain announced that the government would introduce a bill into Parliament extending the age for military conscription to cover the ages between 18 and 41. A full report of Mr. Chamberlain's speech, a part of which has already been given in this transmission, will be given later in this news. Here, briefly, is the background against which the Prime Minister was speaking. At 9 o'clock last night, the German government broadcast a statement about the negotiations which have been in progress with Britain, which was officially described in London this morning as being wholly misleading. It was accompanied by detailed proposals for the immediate cession of Danzig and a plebiscite in the Polish corridor, which were incorrectly described as having been rejected by Poland. In fact, they had not been communicated to Poland until shortly before they were broadcast to the world as rejected proposals. Early this morning, Herr Hitler broadcast a proclamation saying that Polish provocation had become intolerable and that he would now meet force with force. This was immediately followed by a proclamation by Herr Forster saying that Danzig had returned to the Reich. By this time, German forces were on the move and had attacked the Polish frontiers both from East Prussia and from Poland's western border. The German air arm also came into operation. The German Reichstag was then hastily summoned, and after a speech by Herr Hitler, unanimously approved the incorporation of Danzig in the Reich. About the same time, a statement was issued in London making it clear that both Great Britain and France would fulfill their obligations to Poland to the utmost. The Polish ambassador saw Lord Halifax and is understood to have told him that Poland was the object of direct aggression and therefore invoked the Anglo-Polish Treaty of Mutual Assistance. The British cabinet sat for nearly 2 hours. It was followed by a short meeting of the Privy Council, at which the King signed orders in council providing for general mobilization of the army and air force. The mobilization of the navy had already been announced. In the meantime, the French government had also ordered general mobilization and had declared a state of siege throughout France and Algeria. The French Chamber of Deputies has been summoned to meet tomorrow. It was announced in Rome today, after a meeting of the Italian Cabinet Council, that Italy will not take any initiative in any military operations. The Council gave full approval to the military precautions taken so far to safeguard the country and confirmed the economic steps taken. The Council expressed praise for the Italian people for their calmness in critical times. The course of hostilities between Germany and Poland is still far from clear, and many reports coming from foreign capitals are not to be regarded as entirely reliable. According to a Warsaw report, the main attack comes from East Prussia. Other reports say that German forces have attacked on Poland's western frontier opposite the corridor, Polish Upper Silesia, and, according to one report, Poland's southern frontier from Slovakia. Reports of bombing by German aeroplanes have also been circulating all day, and it was stated that 7 towns had been bombed. Warsaw was said to be among them, but a message from the British embassy there says there has been no bombing of the capital. The spokesman of the Polish embassy in London said that Polish towns had been taken completely unawares. Nobody supposed there was war, he said. Without any declaration of war, they have bombed our Polish cities. The German statement is that their aeroplanes have not been bombing open towns, but only military objectives in or near the towns. The fact that fighting is going on in Danzig is confirmed by both Polish and German sources. According to the Germans, the Nazi forces have occupied the railway offices, but the Poles are still holding out in the post office. A Polish report says that the Nazis attacked the only Polish military position in the Free City, the Westerplatte, and were repulsed. The first German war communique issued in Berlin a short time ago declares that the military operations in Silesia, Pomerania, and East Prussia have brought the expected preliminary successes. In Upper Silesia, it claims that the German troops have reached the heights of Upper Katowice. In the corridor, it claims that they are approaching the River Brahe, that is to say, that they are halfway across the corridor on an advance from the west. Of the attack from East Prussia, it says only that the German troops are fighting for the last time being on Polish soil. As for the operations of the Air Force, the communique declares that it has bombed a large number of aerodromes, of which 13 are mentioned. It is claimed that the German Air Force has thus gained the upper hand. The German communique adds that units of the German Navy have taken possession of some positions near the Bay of Danzig and that the harbour of Gdynia has been bombed by the German Air Force. The German acts of aggression against Poland started a few hours after the Polish ambassador had informed the Reich government of the Polish attitude towards the British government's efforts to maintain peace, according to a communique of the official Polish news agency received in Paris. The communique goes on, "This aggression, which is unequaled in brutality, will be resisted by the entire Polish nation, which will defend its liberty, rights, and honor to the end." the German allegation that Polish soldiers have attacked Gliwice, which is the pretext for the German aggression against Poland, is a cynical lie. No one in the civilized world has any doubt who the aggressor is. The President of Poland, President Mosiecki, has proclaimed a state of war and has broadcast a proclamation to the Polish nation in the following terms. Early this morning, Germany launched an attack on the Polish state. In this historic moment, I appeal to all our citizens with the deep conviction that the whole nation will rally round the supreme commander of the armed forces in defense of its freedom, independence, and honor, and that it will give a proper reply to the German aggressor, as it has so often done in the past. The whole nation, President Mosiecki went on, conscious that the blessing of the Almighty rests on its fight for a sacred and just cause, and united behind the army, will take up the struggle until victory is complete. The Berlin wireless station announced at 5:40 this morning that the Führer had issued a proclamation to the army. It said that Poland had refused the peaceful settlement of relations that Herr Hitler had desired and had appealed to arms. Germans in Poland were persecuted, and a series of violations of the frontier, intolerable to a great power, proved that Poland was no longer willing to respect the frontier of the Reich. In order to put an end to this lunacy, said the Führer's proclamation, I have no other choice than to meet force with force from now on.